following Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News and is brought to you by Pottawatomie Hotel and Casino. And now, here are your hosts, Jim Ozarski and Tom Silverstein.
Good afternoon, everyone, live from Lambeau Field, and thank you initially for your patience. I had some travel issues coming back from San Francisco, so we could not get you this podcast right after the NFC Championship game. A disappointing effort, performance from the Green Bay Packers on Sunday in Levi Stadium, 37-20. A loss to the San Francisco 49ers that was way worse than that score even indicates.
It was a total butt-kicking. I think we can all agree to that. I think the better team won, no question about that. And that sets Green Bay up for an interesting offseason as to how are they going to make ground on the 49ers and the rest of, I guess, whoever else makes up or makes up ground in the NFC.
Yeah, it's I did think the Packers would win, and that was largely based on the fact that I didn't think they would have the same, I guess, fundamental issues that they did in the first game, Tom. I didn't think they'd turn the ball over. I thought they'd play a little tighter on defense. And as Corey Linsley said after the game, we did everything we didn't want to do, which was turn it over, not score any points in the first half, and the defense clearly was a massive issue from start to finish, essentially. So I guess we have to start there. I'll maintain that I don't think you can play good defense when you don't score any points on offense. But, you know, that is the talking point. We met with Matt LaFleur today, and he didn't exactly give a ringing endorsement to his defensive coordinator or the game plan. So we'll start on defense, Tom. What was the most surprising thing to you from the NFC Championship game? And then also maybe then spin it forward here as the head coach potentially debates the future of one of his primary coordinators.
The biggest surprise to me was that I didn't piece together what I had seen with my eyes, which was that their run defense was bad all year. And just because they stopped the run against Seattle, Minnesota, and Chicago, three teams without running games at the time, I should have seen that coming, that, you know, they're getting ready to face one of the best running teams in the league, and they hadn't really shown that they could shut down a really good running game all year. We saw Detroit run for 170, and I put that, you know, I thought that was because they had played a Monday night game and were a little lethargic, but I think we saw some serious flaws in their run defense as a team. And I think what else we saw was that Mike Pettine had played a defense that was pretty much nickel all year long. And then all of a sudden, they have to play base defense the entire game because the 49ers said, okay, we're gonna line up with a tight end and a fullback and see if you can stop us. And the Packers hadn't played base defense. They weren't comfortable with it. I think there were a lot of issues with continuity, with understanding what the right hand, you know, the left hand understanding what the right hand was doing, and not having any answers for what San Francisco was doing. And I put that on Patton. Somehow he had to come up with a better game plan than he did. I do blame the players. They didn't play very hard. And as LaFleur indicated, he was really disappointed with the effort and the intensity. But something was amiss there because they hadn't played like that before.
Yeah, and I'm kind of in the same boat. I don't, you know, in terms of the game plan going in, if anything, Tom, I thought they would have sold out more from the beginning. And I guess maybe that's to Mike Pettine is playing base defense with BJ Goodson and Blake Martinez. But I guess my whole thing going into that game was make Jimmy Garoppolo beat you. And at the end of the day, the guy threw 8 passes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that counted.
Complete opposite.
And one that got a pass interference later. So, I tend to be a guy who doesn't put a whole lot of stock into the halftime adjustment. I know on the blog, fans are always asking, halftime? I mean, they're only in there for 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
If you got to go to the bathroom, it's like 7. So, yeah. That said... Something had to have been done at that point that wasn't done, defensively. Maybe they couldn't. I mean, look, that offense went 3 and out, 3 and out, turnover. I don't think the defense had time to fix anything on the sidelines.
Not the way it was going, yeah.
Right. And I don't, that is surprising to me at the end of the day. I mean, I do think that was a coaching mistake, and we had, a lot of the emphasis was on Devontae Adams saying that he didn't like the offensive plan the first time they played the 49ers, mm-hmm. that we kind of glossed over the defense to a degree. And the best thing that they'd done all year was turn quarterbacks over,
mm-hmm.
have sacks on 3rd and 6.
Mm-hmm.
And they just never got there. And you're right, Tom. I'm a little surprised that they didn't do a better job with that. I didn't see 200-something yards coming.
No, and I don't think they had it in them to say, okay, they're pounding the ball on us. Let's go to a 4-man front with 4 defensive linemen. Let's do something to shake this up, because they couldn't. I mean, they had a safety in the box, and it still wasn't good enough. They just were run over, and it looked like they had no idea what was coming. And talking to players afterwards, Blake Martinez said, they were running run plays when the Packers were expecting pass plays. And they were set up for pass plays, and the 49ers just kept running it. And they never picked up on that. And, that's coaching. They weren't in the right places. And then when they were in the right places, they missed tackles. Yeah. Their angles were bad and their tackling was bad. And I just sensed something was wrong altogether. Maybe there was no confidence in the game plan. I don't know. But there was certainly something that was missing.
Yeah, there's definitely a collective effort. I mean, Darnell Savage Jr. was playing single high, last man of defense. And there were several times where he totally misjudged how fast Raheem Mostert was,
mm-hmm.
Or Deebo Samuel, and that was, Blake Martinez is never going to win a foot race. There are a couple times he was probably too flat in pursuit, and the effort thing's interesting to me to have Matt LaFleur kind of call that out a little bit, not a little bit, I mean, pretty vocally, I guess, on Wednesday.
Yeah.
But what's interesting there is, I don't know where to go with that, because, you're not going to motivate me to do anything to a degree. I think maybe you can get me fired up about something or feel good about myself or whatever, but at the end of the day, it's still up to me. So I don't know. That's like, man, I don't know if that's a coaching problem or what were these guys doing or thinking that they just weren't into it, Did San Francisco just punch him in the mouth so hard to start that, their confidence was broken that quickly, and then it just became, well, we can't stop this.
Yeah, maybe something going into the game where they didn't feel comfortable with, what they were going to throw at the 49ers. Like, maybe they thought the plan was no different than what they did the first time. And because I don't know if it was. I don't know what they did, what they changed. It didn't look like they changed much other than played base defense. So there were no wrinkles. There were no, there was nothing I thought that was really creative to try to shut down San Francisco.
Yeah, and it should be interesting. So there was, no firm, everyone's coming back on staff. It was sort of your general, we'll evaluate everything as we record this. Matt LaFleur said he was still working through the staff, and then now with this new flow chart, if you will, organizationally, Tom, he's going to meet with Mark Murphy. Mm-hmm. And after 1 year, does Matt LaFleur have the juice to make wholesale changes on a coaching staff that maybe he didn't have carte blanche to shape in the first place a year ago? I don't know.
I think he does. I think the staff is his. I think he was, I'm sure he was encouraged to keep Pettine after last year. They had built something on defense and looked on like they were pointed upward, and they did have a pretty good season. Not a great one, but they were, they sacked the quarterback and they kept teams to 20 points a game pretty much. But it also isn't LaFleur's guy, and defense has to work hand in hand with offense. Now, the offense does deserve a lot of the blame for what, the positions that the defense was put in. It was bad. They were just bad offensively, and it took them the whole first half to figure out that they were able to get the ball to Davante Adams if they wanted to, almost at will. And, I guess to LaFleur's credit, he figured it out the second half, and that's what they did. But they were thinking that he was going to get taken out of the game, and he wasn't. So that was a mistake, too. They were just completely outclassed.
Yeah, and that's twice now by that same staff. The good friends on the other side of the ball, family on the other side of the ball, other side of the sideline, I should say. Offensively, that's kind of the interesting thing, Tom, and we've talked about this all year long. I mean, they were average as an offensive group.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do anything great. I mean, really.
So was the quarterback.
Yeah, red zone offense was very good. Red zone defense was very good. And let's be honest, if you can either turn the ball over or prevent touchdowns or then score, of course, a bunch of touchdowns, that could swing a game. But, I'd say that, too, in San Francisco, Tom. A quarterback center fumble. I mean, when was the last time you saw Corey Linsley and Aaron Rodgers mess that up?
Yeah. No, it's been a long time.
And
That
interception was bad, too, behind Geronimo Allison, wherever that was supposed to go. So when it mattered, people are on the defense, but when it mattered.
And then he fumbled again.
Yeah.
He fumbled on a sack again.
Yeah, so the offense didn't do its part. So it was a collective loss for sure. The shank punt by J.K. Scott did not help. Tyler Irvin, so reliable, had a couple issues fielding kicks. So all of those things fell apart. And I guess going forward, the way you looked at it, how did you, I guess, view this offensive season? And then, he is a second-year play caller. A first-year head coach. I mean, so some of that is to keep the context. But, where does he go from here? Either redesigning or recalibrating the offense, or is it more personnel-based? Brian Gutekunst, again, needs to, bolster one side of the ball.
I think talent, you got to get a tight end that can run. You got to get some wide receivers with a little bit of speed. And I think they will, I think they will increase some of their talent, though. I think Gutekunst still work on the offense. But my understanding in bringing in Matt LaFleur was that he was going to make Aaron Rodgers great again. And Aaron Rodgers was not great this season. He was good at times. He was great at a segments of games, but he was not consistently dominant. I mean, he was not the best player on the field every game. He wasn't the best player on the field against Seattle, and he wasn't the best player on the field against San Francisco. And so that has to ring in LaFleur's ears that, okay, a lot of what they did this year gave Rodgers leeway to be his old self. And now I think they have to say, okay, we did that, but we gotta take back some of that. I think they have to get back to doing what LaFleur wants to do offensively. He kind of blew that question off when I asked him about it, about getting back to the roots of this offense. But then when you'd ask him individual stuff like running the play clock down to one every play, he was like, no, we can't do that. You know, it just gives the defense a chance to tee off on pass rush. I'd like to get more up-tempo stuff in the offense. So I think he's going to push back a little bit. I think he needs to push back a little bit and convince Rodgers that he can make him a better quarterback by running the system the way it is. And if he wants any evidence, all he's got to do is look at the 49er game and watch that offense, because they did all kinds of things to win a game, crush a team with their quarterback throwing eight times.
Yeah, it's just a couple things. You mentioned the tempo, the give and take, if you will, the meshing of things. You know, on one hand, Matt LaFleur says, I want to make the quarterback uncomfortable in some ways, but then make him comfortable in others. And we did see a lot of the Mike McCarthy based West Coast system, certain plays that look the same. There wasn't any no huddle in 2019. I think that was something that Matt LaFleur won, if you want to count it that. Like, he actually said, I don't like to run no huddle. That's mm-hmm. a desperate last second thing. What they didn't do was, you didn't really see a ton of the what we saw in camp. Huddle, quick run to the line, snap the ball.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't see a lot of the elaborate motions and formational shifts that we saw early in camp that stagnated. And I think that was in deference to the quarterback wanting to see what mm-hmm. was going to happen, as opposed to the motions dictating all happening at once. So I think there we saw the give and take from both ends. But you're right. You know, maybe the success of Aaron Jones, maybe what it looked like in person for the quarterback changes some things. And look, I'll be honest, Tom. If you have a Deebo Samuel or an A.J. Brown or a Terry McLaurin running those drag routes and those slants, maybe the quarterback looks better too.
Well, no question, he does. You know, getting some more talent is going to help him. But is it just going to help his numbers, or is it going to help them win? And that's what I keep asking myself, because really good quarterbacks make pedestrian players better. I mean, look at what Russell Wilson did. He kept Seattle in that game by himself. And he was, the Packers did a pretty good job covering his receivers, but he kept them alive. And in a situation like what they had Sunday against the 49ers, Rodgers couldn't do it. Second half, he got him going a little bit, but he's still, I mean, it would have taken a Herculean effort to do it. I think they're a different team. They're not, every time Rodgers steps on the field, he's not the best player on the field necessarily.
So to me then, Tom, what that says is that has to be a hard conversation between Brian Gutekunst, Matt LaFleur, and then there needs to be a more concerted effort than to give the 36-year-old, soon to be 37-year-old, declining quarterback better talent.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, because that's – and I get – and it's such an interesting conversation because this goes back to the long, you know, who's Rodgers had to work with all these years? And I know that's a pet peeve of yours. You know, and there's always the Brady conversation with that stuff. But, you know, if he can't run around and extend plays as effectively anymore, if the decision-making is more often than on point, then maybe you really do need not just Davante Adams, but receiver two, receiver three, or tight end one, receiver two, who can win in a mm-hmm. three-yard period, and just give him the open guy.
Well, yeah, you do need that, and you need him to be able to hit those. But it's you could put talent on the field, and if you're not, you know, if the chemistry isn't right, if the system isn't right, then you may just wind up with a bunch of yards and not a lot of wins. And they have to figure out how to score touchdowns, and they have to figure out how to make Rodgers as efficient as possible, because he wasn't as efficient as he has been in previous years. I totally agree with the adding talent. They have to add talent on offense at the skilled position. But they can't just assume that that's what's going to turn it around, that they just add a few pieces and they let Rodgers do what he does. I think they have to continue to assess, you know, what he's losing as an older quarterback and figure out whether they can keep him in the pocket more often, whether they can do more up-tempo stuff that puts stress on defenses, do things that are different than what he's used to doing.
Yeah, maybe that's also a continuation of the run game, you know, and not that I don't think Aaron Rodgers or his coaches, whoever they may be, would say just throw it eight times. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, maybe if you have that sort of rushing attack, and Aaron Jones is very good this year, but I think when you stacked the 16 games, there was also that lack of consistency there also. You know, there's the 400 or 500 plus yard games, and then the game or two where it's 9 carries for 22 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So I would also imagine, Tom, that also will play a role going forward with this offense in general. Is Aaron Jones the guy? Questions to ask, because he's got 1 year left on his deal. And also, you know, can they block the way they wanted to do? Questions there at right tackle, right? I mean, this is where we're at in the offseason, is for them to really take a hard look at some of that stuff.
Yeah.
And see, you know, is Billy Turner the better option at right tackle? Because then you need another guard who can run differently. I mean, it you know, and we can get on all that later, but I think these are just, this is what happens, even though you, as a team, you, the Packers, went 13-3 and went to a title game.
Yeah. We never really saw the wide zone, which is what this offense is supposed to be based on. And San Francisco, you could see, got wide a number of times. And it really, it's amazing when you can do that, how effective you can be, because then you get guys worrying about going outside. And then the next thing you know, you're running right, you know, between gaps in the middle. And that's exactly what happened. Packers were, at times, they couldn't, as LaFleur said, they didn't hold the edge. And then when they did, the 49ers just ran it inside on them. So they have to make sure they have the right offensive line and see if they can run that scheme.
So we'll, you know, obviously we have plenty of time in future podcasts to get into the draft and free agency and all that stuff. Now, you know, we spent the better part of this, and look, it was a poor taste in the mouth, to say the least. That said, 13-3, 7-win improvement from a first-year head coach. There was a reason changes were made.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll start there, Tom. What maybe surprised you most about this year regarding the first-year head coach? Maybe it was the way the general manager handled things at the outset. What, you know, put them on this path and maybe leads you to believe they can continue on it, you know, assuming they do all these other things that, you know, that tighten up the issues?
One of the things I thought LaFleur did really well was assess situations and not be stubborn and demand that things be done or do the same thing over again. He was really open with his game plans, I thought, and really smart about trying to win matchups, trying to do what would win that particular week. And I thought he adapted really well. I thought in the early going, he pushed back against Rodgers when there were things that weren't going the way he wanted it to. And I think that showed leadership. He did something right because that locker room was one of the tighter locker rooms that I've seen and been around. He has to get some of the credit for that. It was a good mix of the right players, but he deserves credit for fostering that atmosphere. So I was surprised at those things. I didn't know whether he could pull that off. I was also surprised. I thought that they would run into games where teams would throw stuff at them defensively and they couldn't adjust. And because they were too young, the staff didn't have a ton of NFL experience. Well, either LaFleur was really good at doing it or his assistants were better than I thought. Because they did adjust. They did make some adjustments in games. They had some games where they played well early and then just got shut down. But that was in the early part of the season when they needed to get, you know, a touchdown or they needed to get in the end zone. They were pretty good at doing that in the last half of the year. Those were all things I was really surprised with. And I thought they'd be better in defense, and they were. I was surprised at special teams. They weren't great, but they cut back and they cut their penalties in half and finished in the top five in fewest penalties. That's pretty good. But all of this said, I still think next year is a bigger litmus test. The first year is great. Everything's great. You know, it's honeymoon. Now, especially with this season, they set a bar really high, and you know they got to reach that next year.
Yeah, it's look no further than 90 miles south of Milwaukee, in Chicago, mm-hmm. where you had a coach of the year, executive of the year, a team that came in with legitimate Super Bowl hype, and did not have a great season in Chicago at 8-8. And what I'll say with that is talking to our colleagues down there is they basically said that the chemistry and the tight locker room probably kept that team from totally imploding.
Mm-hmm.
They finished 8-8. The feel among at least the guys in that locker room every day from the reporting side, Tom, was that easily could have been a 5-win team.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the players kind of rallying around each other, having that, and Matt Nagy, that was a compliment of his. So if that foundation remains the same in 2020 for the Packers, you know, maybe gives him a little leeway. But we'll see. I mean, this locker room changes.
Well, you know, so here's an aspect that I think is different and is something that LaFleur has to it's something that is handed to him that is different for a first-year coach, which is, or, you know, a guy who's just taken over, which is that usually when a first-year coach takes over, he's usually got a young quarterback. And the team is growing. You know, it's young players typically. And it's getting better. And, you know, as year two, year three, year four, year five, it's ascending. and the quarterback's usually ascending with it. But in this case, the team is going to be ascending and the quarterback is declining. So how do you mesh that together? I was thinking, talking to somebody about the Packers back in 95, and they played the Cowboys in the NFC Championship game. Totally clear that they were outclassed for talent. Cowboys were way better team. Favre kept them in the game, in this championship game. He was probably the main reason why it was even close at all for a while. And but, you know, when that season was over, you said, wow, there's still a gap between them. But you've got Favre, and he's just won his first MVP. And next year, he's going to be better. And the year after that, he's going to be better. And I don't know that you can say that with Rodgers. Rodgers is where he's at, and you hope there's no drop off. That's what you're hoping for. So I don't know. It's really an odd situation where they don't have, you know, with the Bears, they thought Trubisky would, you know, take right. a huge jump, and it didn't happen. The Chiefs knew that Patrick Mahomes was going to take a big jump. Baltimore with Jackson and Houston with Deshaun Watson. So I just think it's different. It's a odd situation, and I'm interested to see. I think it's going to make for an interesting season next year, because you are going to see a lot of young players ascend, yeah. and then we'll see where the quarterback
especially
goes.
You know, if even if a veteran receiver is signed or they draft one to two receivers, the whole your favorite topic, Tom, the trust with Aaron Rodgers. I mean, there's no time for that almost. It needs to be, if they're going to bring in new players to help in that way, there's no window for that.
And let's address this too. Don't you think that LaFleur has got to talk to Rodgers about his body language?
You know, it's part of leadership.
I
think he mentioned that at one point too. After him and LaFleur had the early season kind of back and forth on the sideline.
I mean, to be a leader, you can't make it look like it's everybody's fault all the time. And I think part of Rodgers' leadership has been that he's the best player on the field. You know, so guys were like, okay, I don't care if he bitches me out, because he's Aaron Rodgers and he's great. As he's making mistakes and missing guys, now all of a sudden, you have to be careful. At some point, guys are going to be going like, why is he yelling at me? I didn't throw the ball behind me.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's got to be something. Someone has to get to him and tell him that that's unacceptable. And I don't know that there is anybody who can do that.
Yeah, I mean, Luke Getsy is his position coach. They're about the same age and kind of buddies from before. And then Nathaniel Hackett, I mean, has quarterback coaching experience, but he doesn't.
No.
He doesn't really come. I mean, I think that's got to come from the head coach.
It does. It does. And that's got to be beaten into him. And maybe it's too late. He's just been around for too long. I don't know.
So I guess, well, that will lead me to a degree then, Tom, is I agree with you when you mention all of the things that the head coach and the new coaching staff did right to win 13 games and in close fashion. I'll bring it back to the general manager. Thought he had a very good offseason. I think the only real misevaluation was to get rid of Trevor Davis when he did. I think that, you know, it didn't hurt him necessarily, but we didn't see that speed from the receiving corps, and it took forever to find any sort of positive momentum in the return game. You know, he's got some interest, him and Russ Ball, some interesting money situations to work with, beginning with a Kenny Clark. Look, David Bakhtiari, Corey Linsley, Aaron Jones are running into the final years of their deals. You know, and then obviously whatever they decide to do, you know, draft-wise and free agency-wise. But I'm going to give Gutekunst some credit as well with the chemistry and keeping his pulse on the locker room. I think he started to change the character of the locker room last year. Mm-hmm. And I think he took more steps with that in camp. And then I think even something small like the, I mean, the Valdir thing, I think he had to do. That was a talent issue. But keeping that 52nd roster spot open for a guy like Raven Green those last couple weeks, he easily could have signed a practice squad guy from another team. Mm-hmm. I think the GM realizing what that could mean to a likable guy in Raven Green, knowing that he's not going to play, whatever. I don't know. I thought Brian Gutekunst had a good year as well, understanding how these things were fitting.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You talk about six starters and adding six quality starters. He could have done more. I think he might have been misled about what kind of wide receivers they needed.
That's true.
That they could win with the guys that they had. I'm not sure that there were a ton of options for him on the wide receiver market. There were a couple that, you know, but he was dead set on improving the defense, and I give him credit for that. I don't have an argument with that. If it came down to paying money for defensive guys and a wide receiver, I think he made the right move.
Yeah, and it's I mean, they cut Jamon Moore, but I could also see that too, where he said, I got three draft picks going into year two.
Yeah.
And probably, honestly, look, we could talk about Jimmy Graham, but he made that call early last year at the combine.
That was his mistake. That was his one big mistake.
And then the coach obviously is going to roll with that and feel they can get something out of him. So who knows, maybe that was – we'll see how big of a skill overhaul there is in 20 now that the head coach has a better feel.
At least he drafted Jay Sternberger.
Yeah.
Because that's going to turn out if he continues on the path that he appears to be on, that's going to turn out to be a huge draft pick for him. Sternberger, to me, looks like he's got talent.
Yeah.
And the thing that made me high on him is that he started out by becoming a blocker. And that was the first thing that he did. He wasn't even part of the pass game. And then we saw in the NFC Championship game, he had a touchdown with a really nice scramble drill.
Right.
Yeah. And so I think he gets in the weight room and continues to improve. That could wind up being a really good draft pick. But he needed to do better this year. And that Jimmy Graham signing, to me, is his biggest mistake.
Yeah. Well, we will, of course, we will be with you throughout the off season. We'll have to pick and choose our spots here when, mm-hmm. when you want us and when, frankly, we want each other. Because I'm tired of East Tom.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm tired of everybody and everything on the face of the earth. And I'm gonna go. I was telling my boss that I may go on a cruise and I may be the first person who slept through the whole thing.
Sounds like my trip back from San Francisco.
I'm just ready for a good amount of R&R because it was a long season. And but, combine's in 5 weeks. Let's go.
Yeah. So thank you all for listening, downloading, subscribing. Make sure you do subscribe to jsonline.com, packersnews.com. Thank you for following us on the social medias. Definitely continue to do that because it is the NFL, Tom. Even if we take a break, it doesn't take a break because they want to own the calendar. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we will be with you. Be sure to check those feeds. We'll let you know when podcasts are coming up. And, yeah, definitely the next big event for us will be the Combine in Indianapolis. But I'm sure you might hear from us
before
then. So, yeah. Thank you, everyone. And by all means, email or tweet us any suggestions for the 2020 version of the Green 19 podcast. So for Tom, I am Jim. We'll talk to you soon.